Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
I didn't know what to think, really. I started looking around the house. As I looked through the house, I looked out the back door, which was halfway down the back stairs to the basement. That back door was wide open. And I went out that door and noticed the gate from the backyard to the, side of the house was open as well.
It's how in the heck can a 10-year-old little girl just vanish off the face of the earth? I want answers. I want this little girl to have justice. I want her to have a marked grave. Right now, she's a missing person. There's no death certificate. There's no nothing. There's no remains. There's no justice for her. And her life meant something, too.
It's like, I wanted revenge for my sister since the day she disappeared. And I didn't really understand it, but I just knew someone took my sister from me.
I guess I just want to believe that it wasn't some complete stranger that took her off the street. I don't believe that she would have gone with somebody off the street. I think somebody would have noticed somebody forcibly taking a little girl right off the street like that in front of a store.
On September 14th, 1990, 10-year-old Casey Perry was visiting with her father at his home in Portland, Oregon. That evening, the two had a disagreement during a conversation about Casey coming to live with him full-time. Her father told Casey to go to bed for the night, and that's exactly what he believed she had done. Her father went outside and chatted with a neighbor for a bit. When he returned, he found that Casey was missing. He drove around the neighborhood but couldn't find Casey anywhere. That is when he alerted the police that his daughter was missing, and the search for Casey began. No one could have guessed at the time that more than 30 years later, they would still be searching for Casey. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 280 of The Vanished, part one of Casey Perry's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. While working on Casey's story, I found that I was having to constantly remind myself that she was just 10 years old. Casey had been through a lot in her short life. In the way that her loved ones describe her, I kept picturing her in my mind as a teenager, but she was still just a little girl. In order to understand why Casey may have decided to run away from her dad's house on that September night in 1990, we have to go back and look at her life, her 10 years. We spoke to Casey's father, Michael, and he explained that he and Casey's mother, Tammy, were very young when they had Casey and that their relationship didn't work out.
Well, when Casey was born, I was, of course, together with her mom. Shortly after she was born, we broke up. I went in the Army. I was around for a brief time after she was born. I took care of her. At one point or another, Tammy had disappeared and kind of left me with Casey. I was living with her mom, and I was going to high school during the day. Then I would come home, and I would take care of Casey in the evening. Then Tammy, after a short bit of being gone, she took and showed back up, and basically I got kicked out of the scene. So I went in the Army shortly after that. So I was alone raising Casey for a short while.
Michael spent time in the Army and didn't have contact with Casey or her mother Tammy for quite some time. After Michael's time in the Army ended, he returned home and got engaged. When his engagement announcement ran in the local newspaper, Tammy happened to see it and made contact with the hope of reconnecting Casey with her father.
Tammy got a hold of me and told me that they had seen the engagement thing or whatever, and I hadn't seen Casey's, you know, since then. We agreed to meet, and then from that meeting, we started seeing each other. We started making arrangements for her to come up and visit with me on weekends and such, and she was probably 8. She was more or less a shy gal, you know. I mean, she had interest in, you know, I mean, when she come up, we go to amusement parks and, you know, stuff like that. She was more of a tomboyish kind of, you know, I mean, she liked to play rough and tumble and, you know.
When Casey was a baby, Michael noticed that there was something different about her voice.
When I first got back together with Casey, and this is something I do remember from her when she was a baby, when she would cry, she didn't have much of a voice. There was something wrong with her vocal cords.
When Michael reconnected with Casey years later, she still clearly had an issue with her voice, and they were able to get her the proper treatment to correct the problem.
This is still a problem with her. That was one of the things that, you know, we were able to remedy. We brought her to a specialist and found out that she had like a skin coating on her vocal cords. So we brought her into treatment. She had a laser surgery done on that. And I remember picking her up that day, you know, and the doctor telling me that, you know, try to keep her quiet. Don't let her talk for a couple of days, you know, because you got to let this kind of heal and everything. And she just could not shut up. You know, I mean, she got her regular voice back after so many years of being, you know, kind of teased by her classmates and stuff for not having a voice, that once she had that voice, she, you know, just couldn't help but use it. It was just something natural in her. She just had this condition that she was born with.
Everyone we spoke to told us that there were issues with Casey's life at home with her mom, Tammy. Unfortunately, we weren't able to speak to Tammy ourselves. She doesn't speak to the media about Casey. However, we did speak to Casey's younger brother on her mom's side of the family, Troy. Troy was very young when Casey disappeared, but told us about his big sister.
I remember her laugh and just, I don't know, like bits and pieces of just one day she came in from school and I came home from school early. I was butthurt that my sister was still at school, and I took a nap and I got up and she was there, and I have nothing but good feelings about my sister. You know, I had a good childhood up until she disappeared. Hold on, I got to cry for a second. If you met my sister, your life was changed by her presence. If you ever met her, you would know who she was. And like, I have people tell me all the time, I remember your sister. You know, and she was only 10. People remember her that she was 10.
Casey has another brother on her father's side, and his name is also Michael. Michael was just 6 when Casey went missing, and he hangs on to the few memories he has of her from that early age.
I was 6 when she went missing when she was 10. So really, it's just partial little blurs of memories, mainly, well, since we had different moms, and we mainly only saw each other on every other weekend when we were both at our dad's house. It's mainly those times, just the sitting in the middle of the room, getting to play together, and Halloween's on the front porch, carving pumpkins and stuff like that. Pretty much having a one and only friend and best friend. It's not something I choose to talk about a whole lot.
A couple of people who have been pushing very hard in recent years to find answers as to what happened to Casey are the neighborhood friends she had growing up, Amber and Alyssa. Even though they were also just kids at the time, they could tell that something was very different about Casey's household. Casey's friend Amber told us how she met Casey and her memories of her.
So I moved to Salem at the beginning of 4th grade. I had gotten to know Casey, really good friends throughout the school year, but I spent my summers down here in Southern Oregon with my stepdad. So I'd be gone all summer. We'd talk on the phone. I'd call and check in with her, and she would still stay with my grandma sometimes when I was gone. You know, she called her grandma. She called my grandma, grandma. My grandma was like that way. You know, you needed something to eat or somewhere to stay, you could stay. You'd get something to eat, you know, that's just how she was. And then school just started back up. I think we'd only been in school for a week before. And then she went to Portland for the weekend for the visitation. She never came home. She was definitely a wild spirit. She was very sassy and independent. I think she spent a lot of time kind of tending to her younger brother. And it wouldn't be abnormal for Casey to show up, you know, at 9:30, 10 o'clock at night at the house. And can I stay the night? Anytime she could stay the night, she would. And my grandmother, I was raised with my grandma, would take in stragglers. So it was not uncommon for her to stay days at a time, even on school nights. So Casey was, you could tell that home life wasn't good. You could see it in her eyes. You could see it in her clothing, how she was kept. You know, she was kind of always kind of on the dirtier side, I guess you could say, you know, not well kept like most, you know, children were. But she was also had this independence. She was 10 going on 20 in that aspect of, like I said, when she's street savvy. She was, you know, you would be see her walking up and down the street and you could just see that she had a heavy, you know, thought on her mind. And then she'd come over and be like, well, we didn't get much sleep last night. There was a bunch of people at the house. She'd always complain about not getting good rest at home. That was, I think, maybe her excuse to want to stay other places. But I would have to walk her home, which is, as I've gotten older, it's kind of struck me odd. It's like, here, I'm 10 years old and my grandma would make me walk her home. And my grandma was really protective of us being out and about because our neighborhood wasn't the best. And then we'd walk her home and we weren't allowed to go in the house. Casey'd open the front door and nine times out of 10, she was being screamed and yelled at. I didn't see her mom too much. You know, she'd stop and pick her up from the house here and there, or you'd see her in the front yard when, you know, I'd walk Casey home because we just lived a few blocks apart. Just the whole atmosphere of the house and the place didn't scream a good environment. And being a child, you kind of knew it wasn't right and you knew stuff wasn't how it was supposed to be. But now being older, looking back, you definitely know that it was not a good environment for raising a healthy young person. I think mom had a lot of, you know, on again, off again boyfriends. It would be hard for me to say who actually lived there and who didn't, because there was always people in and out of there, a lot of people in and out. It was kind of a, you know, maybe a party house, maybe. And like I said, her clothes were a lot of times soiled. Her hair was always really greasy. She struggled. Well, all of us kind of struggled with head lice in grade school, but you know, by the way the outside of the home was kept, I could only imagine what the inside might look like. I mean, my home wasn't kept very great either. My grandmother wasn't really good at that. So I kind of was raised in that kind of environment myself. So she definitely falls into that negligence category, without a doubt. Dark circles under her eyes, her teeth. She always complained about her teeth hurting, like she drank something cold and ow, ow, or eating. She'd chew to one side. She had bad teeth. A lot of children's slipped through the cracks with the social services department in that city, in that county, in Marion County, including myself. You know, I was one of those kids that probably shouldn't have been in the environment that I was in, that they'll step in and take kids that maybe didn't need to be taken, maybe some parenting classes, maybe some nutrition classes, maybe young parents. And then the kids that are severely being abused are still within the families and in the homes. And it's like, what?
Casey's other friend, Alyssa, also has similar recollections of Casey and her life.
So I went to Hoover Elementary School, which is where Casey went. And we met, I can't remember honestly if it's we met at school or if we met like on the way home or how the initial meeting happened. But we lived like two streets away from each other. Casey was a sweet girl, but you could tell she was kind of rough around the edges. So appearance-wise, she was always disheveled. Never, you could tell that she really hadn't maybe showered that often or her clothes weren't washed. She would start hinting at her home life here and there, but really, Casey just kind of, I guess, went with the flow of things, just figured kind of like that. Maybe that's how she thought life was supposed to be. I don't really know. Very street smart. She kind of knew that, like at 10 years old, I didn't know what, let's say, running away was and that kind of thing. Like, I knew what it was, but like, I would never actually do it. I mean, come on, who wants to go run away? But Casey knew, he talked about it before, but yeah, she was just really street smart about stuff like that. Like, she kind of, it's almost like she was an old soul, like, but a really, really sweet girl. I mean, we're talking, you know, 30 years ago, that memory, but she just had that, I guess, where she just kind of stuck with you. You never forgot Casey if you knew her. Gosh, she was very friendly, like with everybody. Kind of friendly, but yet reserved. Personality-wise around people, she was great, talkative, unless it had to do with family, you know, or her home life, then she really didn't talk a whole lot about it. But she was pretty much an open book. What you saw is what you got. You know, she's very happy, you know, at least I perceived when I was younger, I perceived she was happy. In hindsight, I kind of think maybe, you know, that was just a cover. But so Casey would constantly tell, either she would hint about it or she would just come out and say it, like, you know, depended on, I guess, maybe her day, you know, or her mood. But she would tell me, you know, I didn't get a lot of sleep last night. And this was like not just a one-time thing, like it happened all the time. Like she couldn't sleep that night because her mom had people in and out of the house all night.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. We don't know for sure what happened within the walls of Casey's home. Some described her household as neglectful, while others believe it was abusive. Her friends were never allowed inside the home to see for themselves. Looking back, they see that as a red flag. Amber and Alyssa both explained to us that their childhoods were far from perfect, but they could tell that something was different for Casey. Alyssa also recalled a time when she walked Casey home.
Being the kid that I was, you know, I mean, I really had no filter, and like, I would ask her, hey, you know, why are your clothes dirty? And now I'm thinking, why the hell did I ask that? But I remember the first time I asked Casey that question. And again, it's kind of a fuzz. I don't remember her exact wording, but I asked her about why her clothes were dirty. And she said something about, it's just the way things are in her house or something like that. Something about, she's been told she's lucky that she has clothes or something like that. I had walked Casey home one day. Again, she only lived a couple streets away. And my dad was really, really protective of myself and my friends. You know, he worked for the state. He knew that something wasn't right. And so he had, one day he had me walk her home. And Casey's like, okay, I'm good. Almost at the corner of a road. And I was like, no, you know, my dad said I could, you know, to go ahead and walk you to your house kind of thing. Again, this is coming off of a 30-year-old memory. So I do remember walking her to the front of her house. And she's like, okay, you can't come in. And I was like, shocked, like, okay, you know, and all of a sudden the door flies open of her house. And I remember vividly her mom standing at the door and yelling at her. And like, I just stood there after Casey walked through the door and the door slammed and all you hear is yelling. And like, I can't make out what they're yelling about, but that was the last time I walked her home. The one and only time I walked her home. You know, I went home and I told my dad about it. And my dad had an anger problem, but it was yelling. And it didn't happen very often. So, I mean, I knew what occasional yelling was, but that was something Casey described happening all the time in her home life.
To Alyssa, Casey showed other signs of clear neglect.
She didn't really go to the dentist from what she had said. And now reading, like, as I'm older, reading up on the description of her that everybody has, the stuff about her teeth being very decayed. And now that kind of just strikes a memory with me that they were. And she had mentioned a couple times that she really didn't go to the dentist because it's kind of funny. We had talked about it a couple of times because my dad was a fanatic about his teeth. He was almost like a drill sergeant when it came to that. To think about the pain Casey must have gone through if her teeth were that decayed, it just, that kind of gives you a glimpse into her care, how well she was taken care of. You know, at 10 years old, you're still being told by your parents what to do. So, you know, you're still being told, hey, don't forget, you need to brush your teeth. So I know that there was resources there for Casey's mom. But again, neglect at some point becomes abuse because your kid isn't showering, your kid isn't brushing her teeth, your kid has no clean clothes. At some point, you know, that becomes abuse, especially when she goes to school and she's getting teased by people because she smells.
Alyssa also recalled a time when Casey was begging to stay at her house. Alyssa was raised by a single father, and he seemed disturbed by the circumstances, but also reluctant to get involved.
So one day she's like, out of the blue, she shows up at our house. And again, we live in this little single wide trailer in a trailer park. So one day Casey just shows up and she's like, can I spend the night? And my dad's like, you know, my dad doesn't want to tell her no. So he invites her in and he gives her a few minutes. She's in my bedroom and my room, it was so tiny, like it was almost the size of a closet. And he had this bunk bed that took up most of the room. On the bottom bunk was like a bunch of stuffed animals. I always slept on the top bunk. And I don't know, it's 10 or 15 minutes later. And my dad comes in. He says, Casey, does your mom know you're here? She's like, oh, yeah, no big deal. If memory serves me correct, no more did he like start inquiring about it. Then we got a knock at the door. And I remember him one time during that conversation saying, Casey, maybe you need to call your mom, right? But then there was a knock at the door and we were in the bedroom and I didn't actually come out of the bedroom, but my dad came down the hallway because all you could hear was screaming like Casey's name, right? Casey, you know, screaming like angry. And my dad comes in the bedroom and he's like, Casey, you really need to go home. And she's like, I don't want to, kind of like, I want to stay here. You know, I want to stay the night. And she, at this point, when she's talking to my dad, she's literally buried in my pile of stuffed animals. Like she's almost like she's trying to hide. And he's like, Casey, I can't, your mom's here. You need to go home. And, you know, his hands were tied, you know, and I remember vividly after she left, my dad's like, there's just something not right. You could just tell by her demeanor when you talked about her home that something was happening. You just couldn't pinpoint what it was. You only got a glimpse into it. It's almost, to me, now being my age, it would be major red flags. Like, it's almost like she didn't want people to see that part of her home life so that CSD didn't get called, or, you know, the authorities didn't get called, kind of thing. Because again, she would talk about how she didn't get a lot of sleep because there was traffic in and out of the house. The house was disgusting, like dirty. It just, they never had clean clothes. They were always being yelled at. They couldn't have friends over. When you're that age, there's some reason. And if your kid can't tell you the reason, like, if they're scared to tell you the reason why you can't be in their home, there's just something that's not right. And my dad knew that there was suspicion of something, because I do remember, even at 10 years old, my dad talking to me about it. And he was very adamant about making sure we knew safe space and, you know, that kind of thing. He just kind of got those red flags, like when Casey was around, that something wasn't right. But he didn't know how to go about doing it. Like, and he didn't want to say something without definitive proof either, because he didn't want Casey to not be allowed to be around me. I know he probably figured that I was one of her only escapes, kind of thing. That was my guess.
As Alyssa and Amber grew up, they began to wonder about other behaviors that Casey had exhibited back then, and if she could have been sexually abused as well.
So I know that Casey was very sexualized for her age, like touching body parts and, like, you know, just making sexual comments and stuff like that. And I don't think the average 10-year-old does that kind of thing.
Amber told us that she also made similar observations.
I always had a strong suspicion that Casey had been sexually abused because of her behavior. She was highly sexualized. I mean, kids are curious, but Casey was a little too sexually driven for a 10-year-old.
Casey's father, Michael, had only been seeing Casey since she was about 8, and he too had concerns about how she was being cared for by her mother. While Casey's life with her mom wasn't a good situation, it was the only life she had really ever known. Amber explained to us why she believes Casey got upset when her father approached her about coming to live with him full time.
Casey's visitation with her biological father had just kind of started, and he had been brought aware of Casey's living conditions, and that's why he was going to go for custody of Casey, because him and Tammy were not married. So she had sole custody of Casey. They never were married. It was just, you know, got pregnant kind of thing. Casey didn't have any structure or any rules or any boundaries. So then she goes up to another parent's environment where there was structure and boundaries and rules. And what 10-year-old's going to pick to that versus the lifestyle she's used to? And that's kind of how her and the dad got in an argument. He sent her to her bed and she took off and poof, she's gone. She had went to her dad's in Portland for a visit, for visitation. And he had told Casey that he wanted her to live with him. And Casey did not like that idea. She threw a fit, and she actually called Alyssa and told Alyssa that she was going to leave, that she didn't want to live with her dad, and that she was going to hitchhike. Of course, Alyssa told her, Casey, don't do that. That's not, you know, a good idea. And later they get in this argument, and he put her to bed about 10 o'clock at night, from what I know. And then he went and checked on her at 11 p.m. and she was gone. He went and drove around the neighborhood, the block there, realized that he wasn't going to find her. And then he called 911 and got police involved immediately.
Amber mentioned that Alyssa had gotten a call from Casey before her disappearance. Alyssa told us more about that call and how she learned that Casey was missing.
I had gotten a phone call from Casey when she was at her dad's house and said that she didn't like it there. I don't know at what point when she was there that she called me. Like, I don't know if it was, I'm assuming it was before they argued or whatever, according to what the media said. But again, I'm going off of a 10-year or 11-year-old's memory. She had called me and she had said she wasn't happy there. And I remember her saying something about she's thinking about
running away back to her mom's house. And I told her something in no uncertain terms, you know, not to do it. But I think in hindsight, I think that I didn't think she would actually do it. And then our call kind of just ended, you know, just the, hey, I'll talk to you later kind of thing. And I remember, like, I didn't hear anything from her for a few days. So I just kind of figured, you know, maybe she was still there. Or she'd come home or whatever. And I remember a knock at our door and my dad opened it. And then he turned to me and told me to go to my room. And he talked to whoever was at the door for a little while. And then that was it. And then a few days later, we were up on the corner of Market and Hawthorne here in Salem. There's a Pietro's Pizza there. And it was kind of like a little, I want to call it like a strip mall or whatever, right in there. And there were signs hanging up. And on the missing persons posters were Casey's picture. And I was like, no way. You know, like I remember being so surprised as a kid and like just being crushed. And that's when my dad talked to me. Can't remember if he talked to me there or if we went back to his car, but he talked to me. He said, you remember the knock at the door the other day? And I said, yes. And he said that was regarding Casey. So I don't know if it was a family member that came to the door. I don't remember if he even told me who it was at the door, or if it was like a detective or what. But I honestly think my dad was just kind of protecting me. That's kind of how I found out she was missing. And then it was like I would ask my dad, you know, just over time, like, have they found her yet? And my dad's like, I don't know. He's like, I have really no way of kind of like figuring that out unless it's like over the news, you know, the news or something that she had been found.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Everyone knows that finding the perfect t-shirt can be a challenge. I've always had problems, whether it was with the fit or quality. Luckily, the perfect t-shirt does exist, and you can find it at Skims. From cropped silhouettes to long-sleeve layering tees, there's a style for everyone. You know that I've been wearing Skims for a long time, and recently tried one of their t-shirts. It's the best-fitting tee I've ever worn. Skims makes the best basics and foundations. I got the boyfriend t-shirt in Onyx, and it's so soft and comfortable. I want to wear it every day. It literally fits like a dream. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know I sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. For Alyssa and Amber, they were both just kids at the time and are piecing together what happened based on their childhood memories and what their parents told them over the years. When we spoke to Casey's dad, Michael, we asked him to tell us what happened on the evening of September 14th, 1990.
He was with me that evening that she disappeared. I had picked her up on a Friday after I got off work. It was scheduled visit, and so I don't remember what time I got off work, what time I picked her up, whatever. I just remember I picked her up, and we drove back, and We stopped by Taco Bell on the way, had a little bit of dinner, and went back to the house. Visited for a while. We, talked. Through the evening, where the ultimate thing came up to where, I wanted her to come live with me. And it was a perfect chance to, kind of talk about it, because my wife was out of town and it was just her and I there by ourselves. And so I was expressing a disappointment in the way she lived down in Kaiser with her mom. I kind of gave her an ultimatum to come, come stay with me, or she, we were going to kind of discontinue the visits. I was, I'm not sure I really meant that, but I was just giving her an ultimatum that, trying to make her want to come live with us. But she was very protective over her brother and wanted to make sure that, she was there for him. And she just really wouldn't have anything to do with it. So she got kind of angry about the whole situation. So I told her that, the next day that I would take her out clothes shopping and, I would take her back to her house, and that would probably be it for a while. So that's where we kind of left it that night, and I told her to go to bed. It was getting late. I sat up for a little bit. I was out on the front porch. I went to visit a neighbor across the street for a few minutes, and I came back over and decided to go to bed myself. Went to check in to her room for her, and that's when I discovered she was not there.
After discovering that Casey was not in her bed, Michael began frantically searching for his daughter.
I didn't know what to think, really. I started looking around the house. As I looked through the house, I looked out the back door, which was halfway down the back stairs to the basement. That back door was wide open. And I went out that door and noticed that the gate from the backyard to the, side of the house was open as well. So at that point, I pretty much knew that she had taken off on me. Her mother said it was not a strange thing for her to have taken off, and apparently she had hitchhiked before, but she had never left my house or run away from my place. I got it, got in my car and started driving around the neighborhood looking, see if I could spot her, and very quickly decided that, that wasn't the way to go about it. I do remember, coming back to the house, and I have a friend that at that point I called and asked him to come out and help me look. He did. We looked for a while longer, and then I called the police, had them come out. They, took my statement, and I told them that about Casey being able to take and make her way by herself sometime, and that she had maybe, taken off back towards her mom's house. So, being that her mom didn't have a phone at the time, I had to kind of describe to them how to get to, her mom's place down there. So the police called the Kaiser police and gave them directions to the house down there to see if she had showed up there. She hadn't. I guess Tammy called back and using a neighbor's phone or whatever and said that she hadn't showed back up again. It was just a long night of waiting, I mean, it was just waiting to hear something.
The following morning, Casey's mom, Tammy, made the trip to Michael's house in Portland with her former boyfriend, Brian Keith George. Remember that name, it becomes important later on. Brian Keith George was Tammy's former boyfriend, who would become more of a family friend after their breakup. Michael told us more about that second day.
The next day, Tammy and showed up with Brian George. We started getting flyers together. I remember I went out and got a local printing place to run off some flyers for me, and we started combing the neighborhood and putting up flyers and searching. And by morning, we were concerned because, of course, she hadn't showed up, at all down there or back home. So, I mean, you got a 10-year-old girl that's out all night, I mean, we were very worried, very devastated. They were interviewing me, spent pretty much the whole next day going, interviewing me, going through the house. And, they searched the house from top to bottom. There's reasons for them to do that. And I know what it is, but they were looking for her in the house, and she wasn't in the house. So that whole first day was basically just wasted time, them looking for her in the house and interviewing me. There was always talk of, you know, they were looking into this or looking, you know, they were looking for her.
Casey's little brother, Michael, was just 6 when this happened, but he has a clear memory of the day after Casey disappeared, when he learned his sister was missing.
I just wish I was old enough to, you know, maybe I wish I was her bigger brother and that I could have been there if I was there that night as well. It's actually one of my clearest memories as a child. It's the next morning. I was supposed to go to my dad's the next day to be with her, and he showed up to my mom's doorstep, and I was ready with my stuff to go over there, and that's when he told us she ran away and they were trying to find her, and maybe if I had been there a night earlier, she wouldn't have gone, or I could have gone and pulled somebody and we could have found her on the way. And, you know, he always find a way to blame himself.
When Casey first disappeared, the concern was that she may have tried to make her way from her father's home in Portland to her mom's home in the Kaiser-Salem area, which is roughly 50 miles away along Interstate 5. It is believed that Casey left her father's house sometime between 10 and 11 p.m. on September 14th. As you can imagine, it would have been abnormal to see a 10-year-old child walking around alone at that time of night. Tips came in early on that Casey had been seen at a convenience store just blocks away from her father's house. Casey's friend Amber told us why she believes Casey may have headed to that store after running away.
We were of the generation of payphone kids. You didn't go anywhere without a quarter in your pocket for a payphone. Casey was street savvy. Her home life was not good. She ran amok at mom's, and that store was just a few blocks from her dad's house. And I feel that she made it to that payphone and she called for a ride because she had called Alyssa prior to bailing from her dad's house and told her that she was going to be leaving and that she was going to hitchhike. And Alyssa, you know, begged her, don't do that, Casey. I don't think that's safe.
It remains unclear who Casey may have intended to call that night. No one has reported that they received a call from Casey. But if she had called someone and that person picked her up and harmed her, that would make sense as to why they haven't come forward. Michael told us that Casey's mom didn't have a phone line at her house at the time, nor did she have a car. Who else would Casey have trusted to call and pick her up late at night? Or could she have gotten into a vehicle with the wrong stranger who had bad intentions? Some may wonder why Casey would have wanted to make it back to her mother's home if life was so terrible there. Michael mentioned earlier that she was very protective of her little brother, Troy. Amber gave us her perspective on why she believes Casey may have wanted to go home.
I just really feel that she made it to, well, we know she made it to that store. People seen her there. Her belongings were there. She wanted to go home. And then she'd go back to her normal bouncing between Alyssa's house during the day playing or my house, or she would rotate through the little group of friends. There was about 10 of us girls that all walked to school together every day and had a cluster of us that lived in that little close to the school. We were walkers. You know, we walked to school. We didn't have to be bussed in. And Casey was part of that little tribe. And there was some of us that weren't necessarily the popular kids. You know, we were kind of the misfit kids, and me and Casey, Alyssa, and a couple of us. And we all really gravitated to each other because we kind of got picked on and, you know, we just weren't part of the cool kids. But she never wanted to go home. You know, she always wanted, if she could stay for weeks, she would.
It's believed that Casey made it to a convenience store not far from her father's home because there were sightings of her at the store. And also, one thing that was missing along with Casey was a bag with some of her clothes. That bag was later found in the area of the convenience store. It's unclear if Casey could have put her bag down while waiting for someone and simply forgot it, or if perhaps it could have been planted in that location. According to a September 19, 1990 article in the Statesman Journal, tracking dogs followed Casey's scent to Laurelhurst Park in Portland and stopped at Firwood Lake inside the park. It's described as a shallow lake. Divers searched that lake but found no indication that Casey was there. We attempted to speak with the Portland police and also submitted a record request, but both were declined. So we can't say what investigative work was done early on. We don't know if they were able to find out what numbers were called from the payphone on the night she disappeared. However, there were reported sightings of Casey all along the Interstate 5 corridor, but none of those sightings were ever confirmed. Here's Michael.
We got a hold of people on our own. I mean, and we were put in touch with people. There was canine people that came out, and then we had people that volunteered to, you know, every evening, the first evenings, probably the second evening after she digging off, the search dogs were there, and they combed the house and the yard and went out further, and we went around the whole neighborhood and kind of even on the outskirts of the neighborhood, you know, searching for her to no avail. I mean, many people, you know, many sightings apparently of, you know, I mean, people saying that they saw her on I-5 hitchhiking or, you know, here or there. And, but nothing really panned out.
Despite the early leads during the search for Casey, it all seemed to fizzle out. There was a missing little girl, and the police didn't appear to know where else they should look for her. Michael decided to take matters into his own hands.
I hired a private investigator myself. After about a week, he came back, and that's when he had told me about this Brian George fella. And he said that, in his opinion, that this was the guy to look for. And, you know, he gave me certain reasons for that. And I forwarded that information to the police, which, you know, to no avail. I mean, nothing came of that until the next year.
Nearly a year after Casey disappeared, the former boyfriend of Casey's mother, Brian Keith George, made a shocking confession. In part two, we're going to explore Brian Keith George's confession, his history, and learn more about his possible role in Casey's disappearance, along with some other theories in this case. If you have any information about the disappearance of Casey Perry, please call the Portland Police Bureau at 503-823-0000.
You know, there is a possibility that Casey was walking out of that little market at 11 o'clock at night and she ran into the wrong person, because that's where her belongings were found. She had a little purse with some clothing in it, and it was found behind that store. Casey was savvy. She was street smart. She knew how things worked. She had to grow up too fast. She was not a dumb little child. She knew adults' behavior. She seen things that a child should never have to experience. And I think that the mother knew what she was doing with her children was not acceptable. And I think that she was afraid of what was going to come out if it started getting delved into deeper, the children's home life, her behaviors, the lifestyle. I have a very strong feeling that there was sexual abuse with Casey. I think she was afraid of being reprimanded. My feeling on it, looking back as an adult at the situation, you know, without sounding too critical, it was a drug house. It was a flop pad. It was a party home with two little kids in it. And you start going out to law enforcement and say, look for my missing daughter. Well, you know, law enforcement's going to look into the parents.
That brings us to the end of episode 280. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Be sure to tune in tomorrow for part two of Casey's story. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot. And someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.